we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Show, Western Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM, Co-op Radio, CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, May the 6th, 2016. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here by our co-host, Caroline Carnery, and our guest co-host, Jen Dobell and Beck Wonders. Welcome, everyone. This Sunday is Mother's Day. We want to wish all mothers a happy weekend. To honor this special day, we'll have a trio of interviews for you with three vegan mothers of vegan children telling us what it's like to be a vegan mother. Their stories of raising compassionate children who don't eat animals are so inspiring, and I think you will really enjoy this segment. Then we have a special guest in the studio here, former animal cruelty undercover investigator Lindsay Wolf, and she will be sharing her story about why she joined the organization Mercy for Animals to witness and document the most egregious animal cruelties in the animal agriculture industry, with the intention of prosecuting those who are responsible for this abuse. This interview and discussion is coming up in about 30 minutes, so please do stay tuned. So, Caroline, several weeks ago, you were involved in a heated discussion on Facebook where it was animal advocates versus those who don't have a problem with showing affection for animals that they are then going to slaughter and consume. So what was that all about?
Well, yeah, this whole thing blew up on Facebook a couple of weeks ago, which has now led to a protest action, which is being scheduled for this Sunday of this week. It started around an event that Alder Acres, a farm in Langley, was holding, where families were invited to bring their kids to cuddle a number of baby pigs in the barn for a fun learning experience. And the event was billed as a way to humanely show pigs love. And the affair was called People for Piggies. So, now local vegan chef and animal rights activist David Isbister caught wind of the event and waded in with both feet, which started a firestorm of responses back and forth. And the would-be attendees, you know, between the would-be attendees and the animal rights activists who swarmed to the event page to give their views on the event. And of course, the animal rights activists were saying, this is completely hypocritical, and referencing how inhumane it is to keep these animals in cramped quarters living short, tortured lives only to end in slaughter, a very premature death for this really the selfish convenience of tasting flesh, noting that it would be truly perverse to hold out that a few cuddles or sarcastically celebrating their short existence would somehow constitute education. So it was, you know, expressed by David, you know, in fact, and, you know, we were all there supporting him in this view that, you know, this really shows nothing of ethics, environment, health, and the harm that comes to them. And, you know, of course, the people who were supporting the event were just saying, okay, well, you are crazy PETA types and these animals are for food and get used to it. So now, if there's one thing that makes a bunch of animal rights activists incensed, it is this manufactured notion of humane or ethical animal flesh. And following this exchange of perspectives around this event, Alder Acres were put on notice that an action would be taken against them. And out of that was born a peaceful protest that is scheduled for May 8th at noon in Langley. And, you know, if people are interested in attending that or finding out more about the event, they can go to the Facebook page, Action Against Alder Acres, and learn about how they can participate in that.
So I know there was a, like I said, a heated discussion discussion. I saw a little bit of the back and forth, mm-hmm. and I'm wondering, they were called hypocrites, Caroline. What were these people's reaction to that?
Well, you know, I think basically people who support the event don't see anything hypocritical about it at all. It is, these animals are food. They are brought into the world to be slaughtered and eaten. And what we do with them in the interim is, our choice as well, or their choice as well, I should say. And that anybody talking, about otherwise humane treatment of these animals is a bit of a crazy or out of touch.
And of course, it's clear that, this kind of behavior towards animals that are about to be farmed for their bodies is really about us. It's about making us feel good. It's about giving, cuddling with baby pigs and having that contact with them and convincing ourselves that, they're being treated well. And maybe that's even the case that, they live on a farm and run around, but in the end, they're all sent to the same slaughterhouse. And that part, of course, isn't as cuddly and isn't open to children to come to. So we only like to see a very specific part of animal farming and then close our eyes to the rest of it.
But what do you think is going to happen? I guess this event already happened, and when I heard of it, I thought I would love to go to Hug Piglets because that's my dream. But this event was actually geared towards children, right?
Right.
What do you think happens when children go to an event like this and hug the piggies and they find out then what's going to happen with them?
Well, I can only hope that that is exactly what happens, because I think a lot of children don't have any idea that they're eating pigs and cows and chickens. And if they meet these animals, to be on the other side of this debate, given that it has happened, I can only hope that they meet these animals and fall in love with them in their live form and actually realize that this animal is a pig and this is a mother. And this, later when they learn what they're actually eating, they'll make a connection. So I'm hoping, that that does happen and that will backfire for these people.
So how do people find out about this event if they want to attend?
There is a Facebook page.
This is the protest, not the... They're actually having a Mother's Day event there this weekend.
Oh, are they really?
Yeah.
Well, how appropriate for this protest to be happening on top of that.
I think that was the idea, yeah.
Well chosen date. So just to go to the Facebook page, Action Against Alder Acres.
And so some events for this week are Vancouver Animal Advocacy Camp. That is happening May 21st to May 22nd. It's at the Wise Hall at 1882 Adnack Street. And it's an event hosted by Liberation BC, and it's through Liberation BC that you can also get tickets. It's not too late. Food and drinks will be provided the whole day, and it's going to be an array of speakers on both days. For example, Lauren Ornelas from the Food Empowerment Project will be speaking, Anna Pippis from Animal Justice will be speaking, and Amanda Shemkes from No New Animal Lab. So lots of great speakers. Get your tickets. Then there's also Empty the Tanks happening tomorrow at the Vancouver Aquarium from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. It's a worldwide event to help end whale and dolphin captivity, and it's about time that Vancouver Aquarium ends their breeding program, so come and speak up for these cetaceans.
Senator Wilfred Moore's bill to end the captivity of whales and dolphins will be placed on the Animal Voices website by the end of the day. It's currently at the second reading in the Senate. Bill S-203 proposes to phase out the captivity of whales and dolphins and porpoises in Canada. Please sign and share this, as we have an upcoming deadline in June. National Animal Rights Day takes place on June 4th around the world, and this year we have a new event taking place in Victoria, BC at the legislature. The event is to bring awareness to suffering of animals and at the hands of humans around the world. You can have a look at inspiring YouTube videos online by punching in National Animal Rights Day and any city where that has taken place.
If you have an animal-friendly event that you'd like to have announced on the show, please send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver.
thanks for the events there. And I also just wanted to mention the place to get your tickets for Animal Advocacy Camp. It's Animal Advocacy Camp 2016.weebly.com, and the prices are actually very affordable. It's 2 days, two full days of speakers all day, and you get your lunch and your breakfast included in that. And then it's $35 per day if you want to just go for 1 day, or $60 for the whole weekend. So that's a great deal. If you're someone who wants to advocate for the animals and you live in the Vancouver area, I know we have people coming from Seattle as well, or if you're in Vancouver Island, this would definitely be a great day trip up to Vancouver to connect with people, learn, and to network with like-minded individuals. So once again, it is Mother's Day this Sunday, and to honor this special occasion, I spoke with a trio of vegan mothers who have raised their children vegan. And in these three short interviews, they speak about what it's like to be a vegan mother. We'll start first with Maritza Oliver, and then we have Melissa Maltag, and we conclude with Daphna Kedem. Here are their stories, and I hope you enjoy.
Hello, Maritza, and welcome to the Animal Voices Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, you have a 12-year-old son. Can you tell us how long you have both been vegan, and how did you introduce veganism to him?
Well, I've been vegan for almost 3 years, and I went vegan a month before my son. I did it while he was spending his holidays with his father. So I had 1 month to learn as much as I could and be ready for all the questions he would ask. So I knew it wouldn't be hard because my son has always been very sensitive and empathetic and compassionate to the feelings of all creatures. So he understood veganism and made a connection right away. He cried. At the beginning, now that I talked to him about, he used to love bacon, and I told him, you know, what pigs go through. He loves pigs too, and he cried because, you know, And later on, I showed him some videos about some animal abuse, and that's when he cried. He didn't want to eat bacon anymore.
Do you think it's ever too early to explain to children the issues about animal exploitation, animal compassion? I mean, you showed him some videos, and he cried. And some parents would want to shield their children from that, but then again, they're shielding them from the truth. So how do you feel about that? Do you think it's necessary to let them know?
Well, I felt very protective at the beginning, but my son was kind of confused. He cried. He didn't want to eat bacon. But the time when he went to spend the holidays again with his father, he would eat meat. And I said, well, I need to do something more drastic. When, you know, I finally showed him some videos, he never touched meat ever again. And I said, well, this is my opinion. I think it's never too early. Children are more open-minded and compassionate by nature, you know, and they are more receptive to new ideas. And I think we need to empower them with the right choices at an early age. And we just need to find the best approach, right?
Yeah.
And I believe that telling them the truth is much better than lying to them about happy farms with happy animals that want to die to become our food. It just doesn't make sense.
So what are some of your son's favorite foods?
Anything that has beans in it. He loves bean tacos, bean burrito, bean quesadillas. He can just eat beans and nothing else. It's funny. Also, he also loves avocado and cucumber rolls. He's a popcorn and lemon and monster. He loves berry smoothies. And he loves oatmeal for breakfast and waffles with cashew cream. Lots of food. He loves fruit.
I'm wondering, how have your family and friends reacted to raising your son vegan?
Well, I would say my friends, because here in Canada, it's just me and my son. My family is back in Peru. I'm from there.
Oh.
Well, most of them were surprised and couldn't believe that I was choosing to live such an extreme lifestyle, you know, mm-hmm. especially coming from Peru and loving chicken and fish mm-hmm. too much. Yeah, they worry about my son not getting enough protein and iron, the typical questions, you know, or that if I knew what I was doing. At the end, all they said was, well, I hope you're doing is right, and just be careful. In my situation, I'm usually very well respected by my family and friends because they know I have a very strong character and I'm not afraid to tell the truth. So I think they prefer not to argue with me when it comes to veganism. I get very defensive, you know.
I can just say I'm really proud of you of being Peruvian and being vegan. You're the only Peruvian vegan I know. I'm half Peruvian myself, so I know that, you know, Peruvians love their meat. And my mom's always talking about eating guinea pigs, which I think is just, it's horrible.
People do. I've never had guinea pig in my whole life. Okay. Never did, and it is horrible.
Oh. So what would you say are some of the challenges of being a vegan mother, or have there been any for you?
Here in Vancouver, it's not that hard to be vegan. But, you know, veganism is becoming more popular, and it's just easier to find natural produce. You can find new ways of and interesting ways of cooking. It hasn't been hard for me, actually. Not at all.
So what advice would you give to parents who want to introduce veganism to their children as a brand new concept like you did?
My advice would be to first read widely. Parents need to spend a month at least studying about animal cruelty, the environmental effects of animal agriculture, and the overall benefits of a plant-based diet. And they can find almost everything, as you know, on YouTube, Google, and in books at the public library. They can also find the vegan community in their city and connect with other vegan families for advice and support.
Would you say your son is a happy vegan child now that he's been living this lifestyle?
My son is a very proud vegan. He's proud. He thinks it's just weird that people eat animals. And he thinks that it's weird that we used to eat animals. He believes that people will stop eating animals if they knew the truth. He believes that. And he thinks it's just gross that his friends eat animals at the classroom and it's not horrible at lunchtime. He always complains about that.
Wow. He's amazing. Like, he has seen the light at such a young age, and it just made sense to him. Well, thank you so much for sharing with us some of your thoughts about vegan motherhood. Happy Mother's Day to you this weekend.
Thank you so much.
Hi, Melissa, and welcome back to the Animal Voices show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, you have a 2-year-old son. His name is Logan. Can you tell us how long you have both been vegan, and how did you introduce veganism to Logan?
I've been vegan for 7 years, and I was vegetarian for 13 years before that. And my son has been vegan, I guess, basically since conception, because I was vegan throughout my pregnancy. And he's been vegan ever since.
That's awesome. You don't often hear about children who were, well, I always say we were all born vegan and then, you know, our parents started feeding us meat. But you don't hear about children who've been vegan since conception, as you said, because the food you're putting into your body to feed him when you were pregnant was vegan. I think that's amazing. Yeah. So he's just a little boy. So I guess it's kind of hard to tell maybe what his attitude is towards veganism, because it's all he's ever known. I wonder, though, do you find him to be different than meat-eating children, just perhaps in his demeanor or his sense of compassion towards others?
You know what? I think what you said earlier about how we're all born vegan, I think that's really true. And I think that having watched other children and Logan, I think basically you have to train your children to eat meat. And I think kids are naturally compassionate and naturally full of empathy for others. And so watching Logan with our cats, and, you know, he's very, very attentive to their needs, and, you know, he doesn't try to hit them. And now we're talking about bugs a lot, and ants and flies, and how they're good for the environment, and, you know, we want to let them live, kind of thing. So these are the kinds of things that at 2 are kind of important to him. I've recently started asking him, like, Logan, are you vegan? And then he'll say yes. And so I don't think he quite understands what it is, but I want him to be able to say, I'm vegan. And then he actually did say to me yesterday, I don't eat animals. I don't think he knows what it means, but we're on the path. We're getting there.
Wow. I'm wondering, like, have you actually ever taught him that, Logan, we don't eat animals? Or did he just get that out of somewhere, from somewhere else? I'm just wondering, like, how has he formed that thought?
We have several of Ruby Roth's books.
Oh, yeah.
So we read those books. And then he also has a lot of picture books. And lately he's been pretending to, like, take the picture and eat it or feed it to mama. And so if he takes like a, he's got a picture of a chicken and then he'll pretend to eat it. And I'll be like, we don't eat animals, we're vegan. And so I just keep repeating that message over and over again. And it makes him laugh because it's funny. And then, you know, he'll have a strawberry and I'll be like, oh, we eat strawberries.
It sounds like a really positive upbringing for him. I'm wondering, what are some of Logan's favorite foods?
Logan loves peanut butter and jam sandwiches. He could live off of peanut butter and jam sandwiches. That's all he ever wants to eat.
So I'm wondering, Logan's been vegan since birth. How have your friends and families reacted to you raising him vegan?
They've been a lot better with him than they were with me, which I find quite interesting now.
Oh.
Now, wherever we go, people go above and beyond to accommodate our dietary needs, which I think is awesome, but kind of funny in a way too. So, you know, if we go to birthday parties, people will do a vegan cake so that Logan can have some too, or they'll ask me to bring some Daya so that he can have the pizza. So like, it's very much at the forefront of people's minds now. So it's great.
Wow, that's just so considerate. And you're saying it's like more better with him than when it was with just you. So I guess just have a vegan child and then you'll be treated well too, right?
Pretty much. It's really, really interesting, this shift. I mean, I have a group of girlfriends I went to high school with, and we've been, you know, having these Christmas dinners for like basically 20 years. And all of a sudden the past 2 years is like, oh, we have to have all these vegan dishes. And I'm like, huh. Interesting.
Yeah. I can't say that's a bad thing though. So what would you say is the hardest thing about being a vegan mother, or what have been some challenges, if any?
The hardest thing is when people do pull out food in front of him that he can't have.
Right.
So if somebody has like a cookie or like a milkshake or ice cream or something, and he's looking at it and I'm not in the position to be able to provide him with an alternative, that's really tough. So I try to explain it the best I can, and I let him know that we'll have a special treat when we get home. But it is hard, especially at a restaurant where he's like noticing people are eating other things, and he's not able at that age to comprehend why he can't really eat it. Luckily, he's very, very even-tempered, and he's pretty chill and easily distractible. So,
and what would you say is the best thing about being a vegan mother?
Just knowing that I'm doing my part and I'm raising a compassionate, ethical man, really. I mean, I think we need more of those in the world, and I'm really excited to see the kind of man he becomes. And I'm curious to know if he'll continue his veganism as he grows older, and I'm hoping that he does. And it's just, it's really neat to see, and it's really neat to share my love of food. Like, he likes to pull up a chair and come up when I'm cooking dinner and take a look at, you know, what we're making, or we make pancakes together, or we bake cupcakes together. Like, it's fun to have a little friend in the kitchen to make things, and someone who's equally excited. He's gained my passion for food for sure. So that's really exciting.
Well, I think that's just a beautiful answer. Thank you for coming on the show today to speak about what it's like to be a vegan mother. And I wish you a happy Mother's Day for this Sunday.
Thanks so much, Allison.
Hello, Daphna, and welcome to the Animal Voices show.
Hi. Hello to you too.
Well, you have a 10-year-old daughter. Her name is Hilly. Can you tell us how long you have both been vegan, and how did you introduce veganism to her?
Well, I've been vegan for over 4 years, and my daughter just about 3 years. It started with me making changes at home. I think at this age, she was 7, it was different than being born vegan. It had to be, in my way, it had to be a bit gradual, because at this age, I have so many other challenges anyway, if it's in school or with friends. And giving her a basic knowledge of what, why is it more compassionate to choose a vegan lifestyle, and encourage her to think for herself, to think what she sees is right. And that's how it started. And she made the choice herself. At home, she was vegan, fully vegan. And I think the challenges are difficult socializing, of course, if it's birthdays, if it's going for a play date. And at first she understood there was something happening. And once I believed that it should come from within, and not something that we force upon them at this age, because she's a mature 7-year-old, she was. I didn't want to force it on her.
Wow, it seems like she really has her thoughts set out about her veganism, since you said she chose to become vegan by herself. I'm wondering how she feels about why other people eat animals, and how does she get along in a non-vegan world, like at school?
Beginning again, it wasn't so easy. I think, let's say, for instance, going to a birthday party, it's all about pizza and a birthday cake, and you want to be like everyone else. But once you understand it, once she understood it, she didn't want to take part of it. And I think as her challenges, especially facing adults, why they make such a cruel choice from her point of view. I think that was a difficult thing for me to explain to her, how come adults are like that, because it wasn't easy. It's still not easy for us, that people have not opened their eyes, so especially for her as a kid. And when kids come over and they're introduced to vegan food, they don't realize, like when I give them my homemade chicken nuggets, which is really schnitzel from tofu and cashew nuts, and they say, oh, is this not chicken? Or it's surprising how kids can adapt really easily.
Well, do you think it's ever too early to explain to children about issues of animal compassion and why we don't want to hurt animals?
I don't think it's too early. Once you believe it as a parent, ideologically and ethically, that this is the right choice, and as if we are the normal and something is wrong is happening, and it's giving a wider view of the world, of a more compassionate world, into a better world. But it's making a collection. If it's through books, vegan children books, and why pet one and why eat the other, and they understand it easier than we do.
How have your friends and family reacted to you raising your daughter vegan?
At first they thought it was a phase. Once they understood its ideology and what stood behind it, and I think because the awareness is growing and there's no options, let's say when we go together to a restaurant. At one point I think friends and family don't feel confident inviting us over for something that would have meat on the plate, so they accommodate us for vegan dinners, which is nice. I'm not saying it happens to everyone, but I think through time, the same as there's a difference between a vegan beginner, and as the years go by, you understand it, how to deal with life. It's the same with kids and with family and with friends. They understand it's not a phase, it's not something going away, it's not a diet, it's a way of life, it's a belief that there's more compassion in the world, and we're there to show it.
What are some of your daughter's favorite foods?
She eats sushi, and she likes pizza like any other kid, but of course it's vegan, and I can say that she eats a lot of vegetables. She loves soups. She loves soups, Asian food, and French fries. Well, kids love them, which does she? I think she still loves more vegetables than their regular. Well, the kids that come over, because I see it when they have dinner, so they will have the potatoes, but they won't have the greens, or some of them would have broccoli, but there's also friends that never touch any vegetables, so.
What would you say is the best thing about being a vegan mother?
I think I take pride in raising a more compassionate child, and it's a wonderful way of life, and I'm happy to show this, and I'm happy that I'm part of it, and I think it shows. It shows there's more kindness in the world, there's more compassion, I said again. But yeah, it's a happy way of life. It's a way of life with no suffering, and that's what I'm bringing to her, and that's what I feel strong about. That's what's nice about being a vegan mom.
That's such a great answer, and I hope you'll inspire other mothers to go vegan and raise their children vegan themselves. Thank you for being on the show today to speak to us about what it's like to be a vegan mother, and I wish you a happy Mother's Day this week.
Thank you.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio, broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
We are joined in the studio today by Lindsay Wolf. Lindsay has worked as a former undercover investigator who has gone behind the closed doors of factory farms and vivisection labs to expose animal abuse. She currently recruits and trains investigators for Mercy for Animals, an international animal protection organization that is dedicated to preventing cruelty to farmed animals. Thank you for joining us today, Lindsay.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm absolutely honored to be here.
Yay. Okay, so everyone at home will want to know how it is you came to undercover animal abuse work. It isn't a job for the faint of heart, I imagine. How did you start to go down this path?
Well, as a kid, I was always immediately drawn to animals. And when I started to learn more about what happens in these industries, particularly the animal agriculture industries, I was shocked. I saw videos of piglets being slammed headfirst into concrete, and I just couldn't believe that these are the ways that we're treating animals.
Yeah. And what's your opinion about why undercover investigations are so important?
Well, most people have never been inside of a factory farm. They have no idea that animals are crammed into tiny claustrophobic cages with barely any room to move around, that they're mutilated without painkillers, and they are routinely denied proper veterinary care.
So when you say mutilation, what are you talking about specifically there?
So mutilations that are routine on factory farms can include castrations, tail docking, dehorning, all without painkillers.
Right. And dehorning of cows, do they have nerves in their horns?
Yes.
A lot of people ask me that, and I know they tie the, I've seen this done close up and personal in a farm, and they tie the cow's head directly to a pipe while they undertake this, and there's blood flying everywhere.
Yeah, it's clearly an excruciating process for these animals. They squirm, they cry out. This is a painful process for them.
Yeah. So what brings you to Canada right now?
Yeah, so I'm here giving talks on the power of undercover investigations. I'm sure you've mentioned that you've seen videos exposing animal abuse. And when you watch these videos, a lot of people, they are, you know, they're shocked and appalled, rightfully so, but they're not really sure what to do about it. And so my talk is to help inspire people about the positive changes that have come from undercover investigations and to help provide information on ways that they can also help create change.
Okay, so what is your speaking tour here? You know, I know that you're in Vancouver this weekend, and we're going to talk about that a bit, but you're coming across Canada, and a lot of people listen to our show on podcast, so I'd like to have people have a sense of where you're going to be and when.
Great, yeah, fantastic. As you mentioned, I will be in Vancouver, the Vancouver Public Library, this Saturday at 7 p.m. Then I will be in Calgary at the University of Calgary on Tuesday, May 10th at 7 p.m. And then after that, on Friday, May 13th at 7 p.m., I will be in Edmonton at the Stanley A. Milner Library. And then on Sunday, May 15th at 4:30 p.m., I will be at Boone Burger in Winnipeg.
And who comes out to your talks? Is there a profile?
Well, I think anyone who is, I certainly welcome everyone who is interested in attending and learning more about how to improve the welfare of animals.
Does anybody ever show up and give you grief? You ever had a heckler or a troublemaker?
Well, I think it's everyone is their own special. Everyone starts in a different place when they first start learning about these things, and we were all there at one point in our lives. And so, education about these issues is a process. And sometimes people are in the early phases, sometimes people are in the later phases. So I try to, you know, of course, keep that into consideration
and just meet people where they are at. Now, you told me when we spoke on the phone that you weren't even a vegan when you started as an investigator.
Well, I was vegan before.
Oh, you were?
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
And what prompted that change for you?
I went vegetarian as a kid. Just in being connected with animals, the idea of eating them just made me, I think, like most kids, when they learn about these things, it just kind of makes you sad. And then as I began to learn more, particularly about the egg and dairy industries, that inevitably led me to become vegan.
It's so interesting how so many of us get those memos differently or separately, right? Because I was exactly the same when I was 12 years old. I went to a slaughterhouse. I saw the animals get killed. It was like, oh, that's, I am vegetarian now. And then I didn't get the dairy and egg memo until years later. And then when you get it, you just, you know, somehow you have this bucolic idea of the cow in the field and they don't get hurt and they live forever and they're, you know, there's daisies and butterflies and you don't realize what's really happening behind the scenes. So
I have a question for Lindsay.
Yeah. Sure.
So, you know, a lot of us, all of us in the room here are vegan and we all made that journey. But most people who take on the vegan journey don't take it so far as to start doing undercover investigation work. Like, that's a pretty far stretch. And I think, too, that not all people are made for that. What was it or is it in you that even made you want to consider that as something to do? For obviously you're doing it for the animals. Like, it's more than just a job. It was a lifestyle that you had to take on, and I'm sure you were prepped for it as well. So what instigated or inspired you to become an undercover investigator for animal cruelty?
Well, once I started learning about the types of things that were happening in these industries, I think it's something to me that I've always been drawn to. When I found out that how horribly animals were being treated, I felt compelled to do whatever I could to help make a difference. And when it actually first started at pet stores, and I was seeing mistreatment occurring there. And I was reporting my concerns to the owners, management, and these issues are essentially ignored. And so it occurred to me that the only way to draw attention to these issues is to provide evidence that these types of things are happening. And it's truly the best way to help bring this evidence to light and to provide information for people to make informed choices.
And Mercy for Animals in particular, did you see an advertisement or did you, you know, what attracted you to that organization in particular?
Well, Mercy, I had friends who worked at Mercy for Animals, actually. I was familiar with the organization and the amazing things that they do. And they're very effective with undercover investigations and they use every tool that they have to help make these changes, positive changes for animals.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Can you speak to some of the things, some of the successes of undercover investigations? What has it's resulted in?
Yeah, absolutely. Because of our undercover investigations and with the help of some very dedicated volunteers, companies like Tim Hortons, McDonald's, Sobeys have started ridding their supply chains of things like battery cages for egg-laying hens, gestation crates for pigs, and veal crates for calves.
And I'm wondering if you can speak to the efficacy of more and further undercover investigations when there is a saturation of these types of films already. What would you say is the reason to continue these investigations and the importance of them?
Well, it's certainly important to keep up with investigations. A lot of people still to this day do not understand what goes on inside of these industries. So bringing this information to light helps them to make positive changes. We use investigations footage to work with companies to improve their animal welfare policies. And if investigations aren't current, people will also... if it's, for example, an investigation that's a year old and then there aren't any newer investigations, they'll say, well, I've heard that things are better now and things have improved. So it's important to show people that these types of things are happening right now.
Yeah, it was so yesterday. That was so long ago that happened. That doesn't happen here in Canada anymore. That doesn't happen. We solved that problem. And then you have to have the film to say, you know, actually, we've still got that problem. And here it is, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And it's interesting there. I just thought of a piece that agriculture.com posted recently, and it's titled How to Avoid Hiring an Animal Rights Activist. And it just shows where the priorities are for these businesses, right? Like when people who are there to actually protect animals, but, you know, it's a threat to the industry. So clearly you're doing something right, right, when they're taking notice.
Yeah, I guess they didn't read that article when they hired hired you right at places? Like, how did you get in? Like, what kinds of facilities did you work in? Was it slaughterhouses or farms? Or in how did you, you know, how did that transpire? You just applied and they hire you?
Yeah. I worked in a broad different range of facilities. But, yeah, investigators apply to work at hatcheries, dairies, egg farms, essentially any facility where animals are raised and killed for food. And it's, you know, it's vital to expose this information so that people understand what goes on. And a lot of us were at least, and I was at the same time, were raised with this image of this nice, pretty red barn, animals being cared for and treated well on farms. And that's very much not the case.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just so grateful for these films. I reference them all the time. I send them to people all the time. And there's two, when people tell me this doesn't happen in Canada, I send them Heartless, which is a compilation of animal abuse cases in Canada that's put out by Mercy for Animals. And if people are really defending drinking milk and the whole dairy agriculture, I send them Sarah's Life in 30 Seconds, which is actually about a 50-second video, which basically chronicles the life of a dairy calf through a dairy cow and then to slaughter. And if you can watch that and go out and drink milk, I don't know, maybe some therapy is in order. But these are really powerful films that you know, help us in the business of helping people go plant-based and becoming vegan to really help our cause. Now, Allison, you had a question about the prosecution.
Yeah, I've heard the argument, or I guess the case in the animal rights world, that sometimes it's perhaps not so effective when these cases are broken, and it's the workers and the employees at the farms and the slaughterhouses that are prosecuted rather than the owners of these places, because that's not effective to actually, these people are victims themselves. So what is your response to that in terms of what the goal is for prosecutions and the end goal for the results of getting the people to serve justice for what they're doing to animals?
Yeah, well, for most of our cases, actually, we would, of course, like to see the corporations charged for animal abuse, as these are systemic issues that happen all over. And we've actually had a lot of great successes with that, especially in Canada. Hybrid turkeys, for example, our investigation, after that investigation, they were convicted of animal cruelty. So it's of course, important that these companies are held accountable. But inevitably, it's up to law enforcement as to who is charged in these cases.
Okay. When you're on an investigation, I think this would be the hardest thing for me, at least, is that you're seeing abuse and you are there obviously because you care about animals and you have a desire to protect, but your focus can't be on protecting the animal or stopping the abuse. It has to be on getting the evidence. How do you reconcile that? What kind of mental gymnastics do you do in that minute to make it happen?
Mental gymnastics. I like that. it definitely, It takes some dedication and a strong stomach to be inside these facilities, our job is essentially to go in there and observe and document the things that take place, and then use that investigations to footage to help create change. So it's really, if farms invited us in through their doors and allowed us to observe what was going on, that would be great. But unfortunately, there really aren't any other methods to obtain evidence of what is going on.
Mm-hmm. What's the hardest day you ever had on a job?
I don't know. I don't know if I can pinpoint maybe an exact hardest day. I would say in general, the most challenging part of being an investigator is the emotional tolls and looking into animals' eyes, making individual connections with them. Mm-hmm. And knowing that there isn't anything that I could do for them in that moment. Of course, you know, I'm working to obtain evidence and create change for them, but a lot of that is for future generations. But I also actually, I use that as well, though, as a motivator mm-hmm. in this field to help keep going in times where it's strong. I think of those animals and how my life is nothing compared to how horrible theirs is.
Yeah, when you're having a problem, it's just you think about the animal house, or the animal on the factory farm, and it kind of puts things in perspective. Allison, were you going to say something?
Yeah, Lindsay, you speak about the emotional toll that you've felt while doing this kind of work. From your perspective, I mean, you were in several facilities, and you must have interacted with a lot of the workers at these places. How do you think the emotional toll was on them? Did you observe that? Like, from your perspective, how did everyone, how does everyone else deal with this? Like,
oh, that's such a good question.
The non-undercover investigators who aren't there for one sole purpose, just the people who are there to make some money so they can feed their family, and they're doing the only job that they can do.
Yeah, and you know, these industries, of course, they take advantage of animals, but they do it with people as well. And that's, of course, a problem in these industries, that people aren't treated well. And there are issues where employees on the farms are, it's hard for them to do these jobs. If you think of any normal, you know, just any person, and you ask them, you know, would you be able to just kill animals all day long, for example? Most people are just shocked and appalled, and there's no way that they would be able to do that.
How do these, how do these former coworkers of yours, how do they kill animals all day? Like, what did you see? Like, do they have these mechanisms in place, psychological mechanisms, just to be able to basically operate as robots and not show any humanity towards these living beings?
Yeah, well, I'm sure that you kind of almost get into that state of mind where you become desensitized to what is going on. Animals in these facilities are oftentimes viewed as commodities, and the whole process is removing them from being living, breathing, sentient beings who feel pain and love just as we all do.
And I'm curious, Lindsay, have you ever faced any tests from fellow coworkers to see, you know, if you were a undercover investigator, or do they kind of test you in that sense? I'm just curious.
Yeah, well, I mean, the animal agriculture industry, they're certainly aware that we're out there. As you mentioned earlier, they're of course afraid of us, because what we're exposing is creating change. People are seeing this evidence, and they're shocked and appalled, and they're wanting to no longer support what goes on in these industries. So yeah, rightfully so, they should be.
You mentioned to me the other day on the phone, Lindsay, that the last day on an assignment, because you don't stay in one place for years, you go from one assignment to another assignment to another assignment, and you were mentioning that the last day can be really filled with conflict for you. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, the last day on any case, I think, is incredibly challenging, because you feel leaving those animals is internally quite hard. That was one of my favorite things as an investigator, was able to give these animals little moments of love. So perhaps an ear scratch, a neck scratch. These are things that most of them never receive in their lifetime. So being able to offer a little bit of compassion was very meaningful to me, to be able to do something like that in those moments. But then, of course, at the same time, it's a tough job, and you know, you kind of want to get out of there. But
how do you unwind at the end of the day? Because I know at my day job, it doesn't involve, you know, witnessing all these immense cruelties, and I just want to go home and like read a book or watch a TV show. How do you unwind and decompress from all this?
Well, I think it's important for anyone doing this kind of work. You're kind of in an environment where you're just surrounded by negativity and abuse all day long. And so it's important to have an outlet. And I think it could be different for anyone as to what that outlet might be, but just something to kind of unwind, whether that's, for me, music is very motivational. So listening to music, going out for a jog, something to kind of just help clear your mind. But also knowing that the thing is too, is that I know that I'm working to help create change, and that these investigations do change people. And so that in and of itself is motivating to be in these facilities.
I spoke to one undercover investigator a couple of years ago, who actually told me when he found out that I did Animal Voices, he said for him, he would listen to our podcast on the way home in his truck, in order to like feel connected to something that spoke to him. So there's a suggestion. I was so touched by that. I was like, wow, I actually did something to make a positive impact in this person's life who is making these sacrifices. And I just really look up to people like you, and I don't know how you can do it. It's a brave thing to take on.
Oh, well, thank you so much. That means a lot. I appreciate that.
And what would you count among your greatest achievements or rewards? Do you have anything, like a day that stuck out in your head where you said, today I really did it?
It's kind of, it's just such a hard question to answer. For me, it's of course when you're seeing things and you're able to obtain the evidence of what you're seeing, that feels good that you're speaking for those animals who are there and unable to speak for themselves.
And the evidence that you will then be called at some point to produce evidence, and I'm assuming that's video. Do you also give verbal evidence, and do you have written evidence, or what is the form of that?
Yeah. We everything that we do is documented, and we actually turn over all of our evidence to law enforcement so that they can then use that to pursue criminal charges in these cases.
It's actually critical to have that video and photographic evidence, isn't it, in any prosecutions, from what I understand. That's why it's so important that you document.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, then otherwise it's just their word against ours,
right.
And of course they're going to say, no, we don't abuse animals. And then without that evidence.
And time after time, we're seeing that that's not the case. And time after time, because like Mercy for Animals, for example, you're doing so many investigations that people can't keep saying, oh, but that was just one place with some bad apples. You will always hear that, right? You can't refute that anymore. It's every single place that you go into, right?
Yeah, exactly. Every single door our investigators walk through, they are exposing just rampant abuse. And these issues are systemic. And yeah, what you said is absolutely right. People will assume that these are isolated incidents, that this is just one particular facility that must be bad. But it's really a systemic problem as a whole.
We've basically got time for just one last question, and I think it's an important one. What can the average person do to make a difference?
Yeah, great question. So the best way for people to help end the needless suffering of farmed animals is to, of course, simply stop eating them. We've got great tips, recipes, meal plans, and more at chooseveg.ca. Another really great way to help is to share our videos and petitions. It's because of the huge amount of pressure that these companies receive from social media networks, the media, and petitions that they agree to make changes in animal welfare.
Mm-hmm. And of course, in the United States, you're fighting all the gag legislation, mm-hmm. because they're out looking for people like you. And they want to make it a criminal offense to have whistleblowers come in and tell the truth. They're not trying to stop the abuse. They're trying to stop whistleblowers from talking about the abuse. And I think that's really important that we all carry on and do our best to make sure those egg gag laws are overturned where they are put into law and not put into law in the first place. So that goes on a state-by-state basis. Now, Lindsay, your work is so inspiring and compelling. On Saturday night, you'll be speaking here in Vancouver at Library Square Conference Center in the Alma Van Dusen Peter K. Room, 350 West Georgia Street, Vancouver, BC. The title of your talk is Opening Hearts and Minds, How Undercover Investigations Are Changing the World for Animals. The talk starts at 7 and is expected to go for about an hour in length. Is that right?
Yep, yeah. That's correct.
It's free to attend, and we will be hearing you share more of your personal journey and work with Mercy for Animals. I look forward to it. I'm going to be attending and see from the Facebook page that the event is filling up really fast. So this is a popular, you're popular in Vancouver, oh, no. That's for sure. Thank you so much for joining us today and for all your work you have done and continue to do on behalf of the animals.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been really, Lindsay. Really great being
Thanks
here.
Thanks for being on the show, Lindsay.
We love you, Lindsay.
Oh. You guys are so sweet.
You made me cry. Thank you.
You've been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. Please join us on our next show next Friday, May the 13th. Vancouver Animal Advocacy Camp is coming up, and we'll have organizer Darren Chang on the show to tell us all about this year's premier animal advocacy conference in Vancouver. Plus, we'll have a feature interview with renowned ethologist Franz de Waal on the topic of his new book, Are We Smart Enough to Know How Smart Animals Are? We here at Animal Voices want to connect with you online. AnimalVoices.org is where you can stream shows or download the shows as podcasts. read our show blog with detailed links, and subscribe to the show via iTunes. Stay in touch with us via our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. Join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. You can also send us your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. We're closing the show now with music from the artist I Feel. This song is called I Promise You, and it's for all the animal rights activists who are doing good for the animals in honor of Lindsay today. Stay tuned for Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to animals.
This is a promise from the depths of my soul. I promise you that I will always be there for you. Be there for you, be there for you, be there for you. Let's go! This is a promise, and I want the world to hear this. No matter where you are, I want you to feel it. Whether you're somewhere in the cage, on the chain, or with some evil hand, take a minute to hear me out and freeze this moment. Stop all this torture and pain for just a moment. This is a promise to you, dog, chimp, and every second rodent. Every pig, bird, fish, rabbit, chicken, and cat. Every horse, cow, sheep, and an elephant. I love you, and I want you to know it. With my words and deeds of death, I will show it. Climb the highest mountain and scream out the truth. Roll up the sleeves and do what I can do. I don't believe their lies. I hear your cries, I feel your anger and pain when I look in your eyes. And I will never rest till I day and see you free. And I'm not the only one doing this, believe me. I promise you that I will always be there for you. On your side with you in every single way. Worldwide be your voice every single day. I promise that I'll be on your side. Not just that they don't care how you feel. They don't even know or care how they feel. I'm not justifying, just demystifying it a bit. It's just the tip of the iceberg, there's much more to it. They don't even think about the drugs they slit. All they really think about is profit. You see, they use the money to build their self-worth. I know it's really sad, but that's how it works. Then they'd also like to torture to displace their anger. So they hurt the unprotected to avoid the danger. Cowards. Yes, we hate them, and I promise you that we'll expose them. Make them stop breaking news till the day we close them. Till they stop thinking that they have a right to own you. Till they finish paying back everything they owe you. Till they stop acting like they have a right to own you. They will pay everything they owe you. I promise you that I will always be there for you. On your side with you in every single way. Worldwide be your voice every single day. I promise that I'll be on your side. With you, with you, with you. I promise you I'll make it hard for them to abuse you. Slavery is something that you must never get used to. I refuse to let them electrocute you. Cut you open, poke you, hurt you, do all that they used to. Stop the circus and the factory farm. Pull a plug so they cannot cause any more harm. Make it evident that they are poisoning everything and everybody that ever touches that plate. That plate. Till it, baby, close your eyes. We come in to get you. And there is plenty of us, a whole fucking army. And we're not stopping until we get you out. Until you roam me free, safe, happy, and smiling. And there is no more pain left to talk about. And we walking outside with the sun brightly shining. Side by side like we supposed to. I promise you that I will always be there for you. On your side with you in every single way. Worldwide be your voice every single day. I promise that I'll be on your side. With you, with you, with you. It's crazy how sometimes you don't see what's right in front of you until you feel it inside of you. And it just feels right.